Hello, and welcome to Tales for Life. In each episode of this podcast, we'll explore a folk or fairy tale from a different culture or region and discover the life lessons, values, and morals they offer that we can use today. Join me on the journey through the magical and meaningful world of folk and fairy tales. Thanks for being here with me for another episode of Tales for Life, the podcast that goes through life one tale at a time. We're heading to Iceland today for a tale that reminds us how to be better at being ourselves. Appropriately enough, I've titled this episode, To Be Your Best Self, Lend a Hand. It bears repeating that we are all social creatures. We don't thrive on our own. Even introverts and animal lovers need to spend time with other people. Beyond just the need for contact and interaction, there are other aspects of our existence that just cannot be achieved on our own. One of those aspects is becoming our best self. When I talk about best self, I'm referring here to the inner self. After all, there aren't a lot of folk tales that talk about going to the gym. Our inner self is the part of us that determines what sort of person we are and how we're going to get on in our lives. No matter how much money we have or how great of shape we're in, if our inner self is miserable or grumpy or just unhappy, none of that other stuff will matter. Now, there are a lot of ways to get our inner self in the shape it needs to be. Meditation or prayer, gratitude, positive outlook, and many other components are a part of that. But there's a physical part of our inner self too, and that's taking the time and effort to help others. As I discussed back in episode 7, a little kindness goes a long way. That kindness also shapes who we are. Without that kindness and generosity, we're incomplete. With it, we can be our best self. One very nice story that illustrates this is from Iceland and found its way into English language printing well over a century ago. It's titled, Kisa the Cat. Once upon a time there lived a queen who had a beautiful cat the color of smoke with china blue eyes, which she was very fond of. The cat was constantly with her and ran after her wherever she went, and even sat up proudly by her side when she drove out in her fine glass coach. "Oh, Pussy," said the queen one day, "you are happier than I am, for you have a dear kitten just like yourself, and I have nobody to play with but you." "Don't cry," answered the cat, laying her paw on her mistress's arm. "Crying never does any good. I will see what can be done." The cat was as good as her word. As soon as she returned from her drive, she trotted off to the forest to consult a fairy who dwelt there. And, very soon after, the queen had a little girl who seemed made out of snow and sunbeams. The queen was delighted, and soon the baby began to take notice of the kitten as she jumped about the room, and would not go to sleep at all unless the kitten lay curled up beside her. 2 or 3 months went by, and though the baby was still a baby, the kitten was fast becoming a cat. And one evening when, as usual, the nurse came to look for her to put her in the baby's cot, she was nowhere to be found. What a hunt there was for that kitten, to be sure! The servants, each anxious to find her, as the queen was certain to reward the lucky man, searched in the most impossible places. Boxes were opened that would hardly have held the kitten's paw. Books were taken from bookshelves lest the kitten should have got behind them. Drawers were pulled out, for perhaps the kitten might have got shut in. But it was all no use. The kitten had plainly run away, and nobody could tell if it would ever choose to come back. Years passed away, and one day when the princess was playing ball in the garden, she happened to throw her ball farther than usual, and it fell into a clump of rose bushes. The princess, of course, ran after it at once, and she was stooping down to feel if it was hidden in the long grass when she heard a voice calling her. "Ingibjorg, Ingibjorg," it said, "have you forgotten me? I am Kisa, your sister." "But I never had a sister," answered Ingibjorg, very much puzzled, for she knew nothing of what had taken place so long ago. "Don't you remember how I always slept in your cot beside you, and how you cried till I came? But girls have no memories at all. Why, I could find my way straight up to that cot this moment if I was once inside the palace." "Why did you go away then?" asked the princess. But before Kisa could answer, Ingeborg's attendants arrived, breathless, on the scene, and were so horrified at the sight of a strange cat that Kisa plunged into the bushes and went back to the forest. The princess was very much vexed with her ladies-in-waiting for frightening away her old playfellow, and told the queen, who came to her room every evening to bid her good night. "Yes, it is quite true what Kisa said," answered the queen. "I should have liked to see her again. Perhaps some day she will return, and then you must bring her to me." Next morning it was very hot, and the princess declared that she must go and play in the forest where it was always cool under the big shady trees. As usual, her attendants let her do anything she pleased, and sitting down on a mossy bank where a little stream tinkled by, they soon fell sound asleep. The princess saw with delight that they would pay no heed to her, and wandered on and on, expecting every moment to see some fairies dancing round a ring, or some little brown elves peeping at her from behind a tree. But alas, she met none of these. Instead, a horrible giant came out of his cave and ordered her to follow him. The princess felt much afraid, as he was so big and ugly, and began to be sorry that she had not stayed within reach of help. But as there was no use in disobeying the giant, she walked meekly behind. They went a long way, and Ingeborg grew very tired, and at length began to cry. "I don't like girls who make horrid noises," said the giant, turning round. "But if you want to cry, I will give you something to cry for." And drawing an axe from his belt, he cut off both her feet, which he picked up and put in his pocket. Then he went away. Poor Ingeborg lay on the grass in terrible pain, and wondering if she should stay there till she died, as no one would know where to look for her. How long it was since she had set out in the morning she could not tell. It seemed years to her, of course. But the sun was still high in the heavens when she heard the sound of wheels, and then, with a great effort, for her throat was parched with fright and pain, she gave a shout. "I am coming," was the answer. And in another moment, a cart made its way through the trees, driven by Kisa, who used her tail as a whip to urge the horse to go faster. Directly Kisa saw Ingeborg lying there, she jumped quickly down, and lifting the girl carefully in her two front paws, laid her upon some soft hay, and drove back to her own little hut. In the corner of the room was a pile of cushions, and these Kisa arranged as a bed. Ingeborg, who by this time was nearly fainting from all she had gone through, drank greedily some milk, and then sank back on the cushions while Kisa fetched some dried herbs from a cupboard, soaked them in warm water, and tied them on the bleeding legs. The pain vanished at once, and Ingeborg looked up and smiled at Kisa. "You will go to sleep now," said the cat, "and you will not mind if I leave you for a little while. I will lock the door, and no one can hurt you." But before she had finished, the princess was asleep. Then Kisa got into the cart, which was standing at the door, and catching up the reins, drove straight to the giant's cave. Leaving her cart behind some trees, Kisa crept gently up to the open door and, crouching down, listened to what the giant was telling his wife, who was at supper with him. "The first day that I can spare, I shall just go back and kill her," he said. "It would never do for people in the forest to know that a mere girl can defy me." And he and his wife were so busy calling Ingeborg all sorts of names for her bad behavior that they never noticed Kisa stealing into a dark corner and upsetting a whole bag of salt into the great pot before the fire. "Dear me, How thirsty I am, cried the giant by and by. So am I, answered the wife. I do wish I had not taken that last spoonful of broth. I am sure something was wrong with it. If I don't get some water, I shall die, went on the giant. And rushing out of the cave, followed by his wife, he ran down the path which led to the river. Then Kisa entered the hut, and lost no time in searching every hole till she came upon some grass, under which Ingeborg's feet were hidden, and putting them in her cart, drove back again to her own hut. Ingeborg was thankful to see her, for she had lain too frightened to sleep, trembling at every noise. Oh, is it you? She cried joyfully as Kisa turned the key. And the cat came in, holding up the two neat little feet in their silver slippers. In 2 minutes they shall be as tight as they ever were, said Kisa. And taking some strings of the magic grass which the giant had carelessly heaped on them, she bound the feet on to the legs above. Of course you won't be able to walk for some time, you must not expect that, she continued. But if you are very good, perhaps in about a week I may carry you home again. And so she did. And when the cat drove the cart up to the palace gate, lashing their horse furiously with her tail, and the king and queen saw their lost daughter sitting beside her, they declared that no reward could be too great for the person who had brought her out of the giant's hands. We will talk about that by and by, said the cat, as she made her best bow and turned her horse's head. The princess was very unhappy when Kisa left her without even bidding her farewell. She would neither eat nor drink, nor take any notice of all the beautiful dresses her parents bought for her. She will die unless we can make her laugh, one whispered to the other. Is there anything in the world that we have left untried? Nothing except marriage, answered the king. And he invited all the handsome young men he could think of to the palace, and bade the princess choose a husband from among them. It took her some time to decide which she admired the most, but at last she fixed upon a young prince whose eyes were like the pools in the forest and his hair of bright gold. The king and the queen were greatly pleased, as the young man was the son of a neighboring king, and they gave orders that a splendid feast should be got ready. When the marriage was over, Kisa suddenly stood before them, and Ingeborg rushed forward and clasped her in her arms. I have come to claim my reward, said the cat. Let me sleep for this night at the foot of your bed. Is that all? Asked Ingeborg, much disappointed. It is enough, answered the cat. And when the morning dawned, it was no cat that lay upon the bed, but a beautiful princess. My mother and I were both enchanted by a spiteful fairy, said she. We could not free ourselves till we had done some kindly deed that had never been wrought before. My mother died without ever finding a chance of doing anything new, but I took advantage of the evil act of the giant to make you as whole as ever. Then they were all more delighted than before, and the princess lived in the court until she too married and went away to govern one of her own. I really enjoy this tale, because it has so many meanings underneath the simple story of a queen and princess turned into cats. And it's those meanings that make it so timeless. The first one to take a look at is the queen who was turned into a cat. At first glance, she has a pretty good life. She's treated well by the human queen, gets to ride in the royal carriage, and generally has an easy life. By most objective standards, we would say she had a good life. But at the end of the tale, we discover that it wasn't her best life, which is an important distinction. And then there's Kisa. Again, at first glance, she has a pretty good life. And again, we learn it's not her best life. But she manages to find a way to lend a hand in such a significant manner that it not only changes the life of the person she is helping, but it literally changes hers as well, transforming her into her best self. And that's the key takeaway for us. No act of true kindness, even a small one, will ever go unnoticed or unrewarded. But if it's something we can do without much thought or effort, it's not going to have a lasting effect on ourselves. But a real act of effort has impact that will last a lifetime. None of us are under an evil spell to take the form of an animal until we do something that has never been done before. But we are subject to the self we choose to be. And there's really nothing wrong with living a pretty good life and being a pretty good person. But keep your eyes open for that opportunity to lend a big hand, because your best self and your best life are waiting to come out when you do.